This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Several explosions are reportedly heard at a military base housing U.S. troops in Syria's eastern province of Deir ez-Zor. People protest in Prague to voice opposition to the EU and NATO and accuse the Czech government of paying more attention to Ukraine than to its own citizens. Also ahead, militants from the Al-Shabaab terrorist group kill at least 19 civilians in a night raid in central Somalia. Hello and welcome. We are coming to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Thank you for joining us. Top story this hour. Explosions, several of them, have been heard at a military facility housing U.S. forces in Syria's eastern province of Deir ez-Zor. Syrian media say the explosions took place at the American base in the Al Omar oil field. Local sources say a plume of smoke is rising out of the area. The U.S. military has stationed forces and equipment in Syria's oil-rich regions. Washington says the deployment is aimed at preventing the oil fields in the regions from falling into the hands of Daesh terrorists. Syria has time and again condemned U.S. military presence on its soil. It maintains the deployment is meant to plunder the country's resources, particularly oil. Iran's deputy defense minister says more than 50 Iranian cities have been equipped with civil defense systems. Brigadier General Mehdi Farahi says the civil defense equipment will enable Iran to identify and monitor threats. It says the equipment will also provide hardware and software which are needed to quickly respond and counter these threats against the country. This comes as Iran seeks to boost its defense capabilities in dealing with potential sabotage operations. Iran says the U.S. and Israel have carried out cyber attacks and acts of sabotage in the country over the past years. Iran's Kish airline has resumed flights to Afghanistan. Iranian and Afghan officials say this paves the way for closer economic cooperation between Iran and the conflict-stricken Afghanistan. Our correspondent reports from Kabul.
Iran's Kish airline is back to Afghanistan. Afghan and Iranian officials have welcomed this in a ceremony at Kabul's International Airport and stressed the importance of closer economic cooperation between the two countries.
We're happy today and welcome Air Kish Airline. We have very good relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran and do our best to expand cooperation in the political, economic and social fields.
This airway can be very helpful in the economic and cultural fields. I think such flights will soon be welcomed by other airlines as well, and that makes transportation between the two countries easier.
Iran has always tried to help boost Afghanistan's economy, and the resumption of Kish Air flights to Afghanistan can be considered another positive step in that regard. In recent months, Afghanistan has been deprived of many sources of international aid and even its own financial assets held in the United States. Now, Afghanistan's cooperation with Iran appears to be vital to the country's economic growth.
Such economic activities in cooperation with other neighboring countries promise the improvement of Afghanistan's economy by providing job and investment opportunities for people and for businessmen. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
Yemen's oil ministry has held a press conference in the capital Sana'a to shed light on the looting of Yemeni crude oil by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. It says Riyadh and its allies continue to block Yemeni fuel or fuel ships and steal the country's oil despite a UN-brokered truce. More in this report by Abdullatif Al-Washali.
Yemen is facing a fuel crisis as Saudi Arabia and its allies continue to block fuel ships in violation of a UN-brokered truce and steal the country's crude oil. Yemen's Ministry of Oil has held a press conference in Sana'a to discuss the issue.
You get Yemen.
There are 13 oil basins in Yemen.
of which only two are invested, namely Safar and Al-Masila, at a rate of only 18%. These basins are located in Marib and Shabwa, and they are controlled by the Saudi-backed forces. They are continuously being looted, and this reflects negatively on the Yemeni economy. The systematic looting is one of the reasons for the years-long war against us by Saudi Arabia and its allies.
The ministry says the plundered oil is worth billions of dollars, which is enough to pay the suspended salaries of Yemeni employees. It held the Saudi-led coalition responsible for cutting off the salaries as the oil sales are being supplied to Saudi banks. Yemen's petroleum company warned of an imminent fuel crisis as Riyadh is still preventing 9 fuel ships from entering the country, which is a clear violation of the UN brokered truce. However, the world body remains silent toward the Saudi violations.
As Yemenis face a fuel crunch due to the Saudi blockade, they are urging the United Nations to force Riyadh to fulfill its commitments under the ceasefire agreement and to stop detaining fuel ships headed to the country. They say pillaging Yemeni oil also reveals why the Saudi-led coalition launched a war on their country. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Tens of thousands of people protest in the capital of the Czech Republic, accusing the government of paying more attention to the war-ravaged Ukraine than to its own citizens. The protesters also voiced opposition to the European Union and NATO and called on the government to do more to control soaring energy prices. They said their country should be neutral militarily and ensure direct contracts with gas suppliers, including Russia. The protest comes a day after the government survived a no-confidence vote amid opposition claims of inaction against inflation. Energy prices are growing in the Czech Republic and other European countries following a drop in gas supplies from Russia. The UN Nuclear Agency says Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant has once again been disconnected from its last remaining main power line. The IAEA, however, says the facility continues to supply electricity through a reserve line. Alarm has grown in recent weeks over shells hitting the area of Europe's largest nuclear plant. The UN Nuclear Agency has expressed concern about the physical condition of the facilities. The IAEA this week sent a mission to the plant to survey operations and assess potential damage. Russia and Ukraine blame each other for the repeated shelling of the plant. Kiev has admitted bombing what it called a Russian base in a district where the Zaporizhzhia power plant is located. Germany bracing for further energy crunch as Russia extends the outage of gas supplies via the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. Germany's network regulator says the country's gas supply is guaranteed for now, but the situation is tense and could worsen. On Friday, Moscow said it scrapped a 72-hour deadline to resume flows via the pipelines, just hours before it was due to recommence deliveries. Moscow has cited the leakage of oil in one of the turbines for slashing the flow. Germany, however, says the defects alleged by the Russian side are not a technical reason. Meantime, the EU Economy Commissioner has noted that the bloc is ready for a full stop in gas deliveries from Russia. Paolo Gentiloni says the EU is well prepared to resist Russia's extreme use of the gas as weapon. Now, Italy's football league Serie A says it will put a four-hour limit on the use of floodlights in stadiums on match days. It says the measure aims to cut energy use as prices have gone up. That comes as the government in Rome is in talks to adopt energy-saving measures ahead of the winter. Max Civili has more.
On Thursday, Italy's outgoing government discussed an energy-saving plan during a Council of Ministers aimed to save up for this winter as part of efforts to reduce the country's dependency on Russian gas. Ecological Transition Minister Roberto Cingolani's plan includes limiting the use of heating in apartment blocks and public buildings. Italians will be demanded to turn down the central heating by 1 degree and turn it off for an hour at dusk every day starting in October. Italy is struggling with increased energy costs as wholesale gas prices have surged to historic levels across Europe since the start of the conflict in Ukraine.
Italy and a few other countries, including Belgium and the Czech Republic, are among those seeking an EU price cap on gas for power, but some members of the bloc, including France, are against this option. An emergency meeting of European Union energy ministers will be held in Brussels on September 9 to reach a consensus on tackling skyrocketing power costs.
We have a big gas problem. Our families and businesses are struggling, and politicians keep talking about making more debt to alleviate the crisis. But that would just be a patchwork. Italy must leave the TTF, the virtual trading point for natural gas based in the Netherlands, and then we can discuss a new LNG strategy.
Meanwhile, the Italian Confederation of Enterprises, Confcommercio, has warned some 120,000 Italian service sector firms could go out of business over the next 10 months if energy costs keep rising at the current pace. Confcommercio, which has estimated that 370,000 jobs are at risk, is calling on the government to extend tax relief and to mandate that bills can be paid in smaller installments. The bad news for Italy doesn't stop there. Inflation jumped to 9% in August from 8.4% the month before. Financial analysts expect inflation to grow further, reaching 10% in October. Max Civili, Rome.
The Al-Shabaab terrorist group has killed at least 19 civilians in Somalia's central region. That's according to clan chiefs and local officials. They say members of the terrorist group carried out the raid overnight Friday. Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud has condemned the attack as despicable. He said the government will leave no stone unturned in the fight against terrorism. Last month, Al-Shabaab terrorists stormed a hotel in Mogadishu and killed more than 20 people. The group frequently launches bombings, gun assaults, and other attacks on military and civilian targets. Cuba accuses the United States of pushing its citizens against the government by funding the so-called democracy promotion programs in the island nation.
For the United States, it is not enough to have a policy directed at trying to provoke hunger, malnutrition, and scarcity in Cuba. Besides that, after doing this, they are urging the Cuban people by using $6 million from taxpayers to rise up against the government because of the problems we are facing as a result of the blockade.
The deputy foreign minister called those programs interventionist and illegal. Fernandez de Cosio said Washington has been trying to topple the Cuban government for decades, but has never attempted in such an explicit way before. He said the U.S. punishes its own citizens for working as foreign agents, but encourages such illegal behavior in other countries. In July, U.S. President Joe Biden announced a program which awards organizations and individuals over $6 million for, quote, promoting democratic change in Cuba. The Caribbean island nation has been under U.S. embargo since 1962. It's now grappling with its worst economic crisis, with acute shortages of fuel and basic goods, such as food and medicine. China issues a stern warning as the United States or U.S. State Department gives the green light to President Joe Biden to supply Taiwan with arms worth over $1 billion. A spokesperson for the Chinese embassy in Washington says the arms delivery would severely jeopardize relations as well as peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait. He warns that Beijing will take legitimate and necessary countermeasures over the move that provokes separatist forces in Taiwan. The Pentagon has announced a military aid package for Taiwan that includes 60 anti-ship and 100 air-to-air missiles. The Biden administration says the package has been under consideration for some time. The approval, however, comes amid heightened tensions. The two big economies have been on the collision course ever since a controversial visit by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Taiwan last month. Tensions escalated further after more American politicians landed there. Beijing considers Taiwan as part of its territory and has repeatedly warned Washington against its growing ties with the island. A rapidly moving wildfire is prompting evacuations, torching homes, and injuring people in the U.S. state of California. Authorities say the blaze, dubbed the Mill Fire, has destroyed some 100 homes and other buildings, burning over 1,600 hectares of land in Northern California. The state's governor has declared a state of emergency for the worst-hit areas, while some 7,500 people are under evacuation orders. More than two decades of drought and rising temperatures have made California more vulnerable than ever to wildfires. The two most devastating years on record are 2020 and 2021. A new book in UK media reports disclosed Britain's police and security services helped cover up the role of the Canadian intelligence agency in a British teenager's journey to join Daesh terror group in 2015. Our correspondent Robert Carter reports.
Did the UK authorities cover up the trafficking of three British schoolgirls who joined the notorious Daesh terror group back in 2015? That is the question now being asked following shock allegations revealed in a new book, which claims that Canadian intelligence officers informed British police that the girls had entered Syria with the help of a double agent, Mohammed al-Rashid, who provided information to Canada on who he had smuggled to ISIL. One of the girls involved is the former UK citizen Shamima Begum, who is currently fighting for a return to Britain under the argument she was groomed by traffickers.
An inquiry has been demanded after it emerged that Canada knew about the teenager's fate but kept silent while the Metropolitan Police ran a frantic international search for the trio. The book has claimed that Canada privately admitted its involvement only when it feared being exposed and successfully asked British authorities to cover up its role. The scandal has now reopened the debate over stripping Begum of her nationality.
Following the latest allegations, we spoke with the Begum family lawyer for his reaction.
Now, the reason that was rather egregious for us was because we had asked specifically the Met Police at the end of March 2015 about updates regarding anything that could be coming of use from al-Rashid, and they confirmed that they had no updates, and that clearly is not the case if what Richard Walton is saying is actually true in this book. This revelation about Canadian Security Services asset being one fundamental element that allowed these girls to cross over, well, that speaks against error. It speaks more to a concerted, securitized effort to have these girls go across, and that's actually true of the Canadians. The question remains of whether other security agencies who were working with these girls, with these handlers of this Canadian asset, who wanted the same thing. And that's a question, and that's why an inquiry is very important.
A spokesman for the UK government said they do not comment on operational intelligence or security matters. But choosing to remain silent won't be enough to quell the growing questions surrounding the way Western intelligence dealt with Daesh or their sophisticated smuggling operations, which saw so many Westerners slip through the net, including the young and vulnerable. Robert Carter, London.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Mark Tufnell, president of the Country Land and Business Association, which represents about 30,000 British landowners and rural businesses, said Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, the two candidates for the leadership of the British Conservative Party, had done too little to show how they would boost the countryside economy and deal with pressing concerns such as planning, rural broadband and farm support. We have prepared for you an article written by Fiona Harvey. The piece is titled British Rural Voters Ignored by Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Please stay with us for more of Fiona Harvey's article. The head of the UK's biggest rural business organisation said neither of the candidates for leadership of the Conservative Party has made a convincing pitch to rural voters in Britain, despite that demographic being one of the biggest sources of Tory power. Mark Tufnell, president of the Country Land and Business Association, which represents about 30,000 landowners and rural businesses, said Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak had done too little to show how they would boost the countryside economy and deal with pressing concerns such as planning, rural broadband and farm support. Mark Tufnell said, "I don't think either candidate really understands what is happening in the countryside and what the real issues are." He added, "Both of them have said nice things about farms, but there is no understanding of what is actually happening in the countryside. They have not said much about it." Mark Tufnell warned that the failure could cost the party at the next general election. He said, "They assume that we in the countryside vote Conservative and that they don't really need to worry about us, but they should." At the 2019 election, 46% of voters in rural counties voted Conservative and only 29% voted Labour. But polling conducted by the Country Land and Business Association CLA before Boris Johnson's resignation found a sizeable swing of about 7.5% from the Tories to Labour, putting the two main parties neck and neck in some rural areas of Britain. The Liberal Democrats are also making inroads with strong local election showings and the capture of the formerly safe blue seat of Tiverton and Honiton in Devon in the June by-election. Mark Tufnell said, "The Tories have taken countryside voters for granted," adding, "they've shown a lack of interest." While Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak have sought to reassure farmers during their campaigns, Mark Tufnell pointed out that the bulk of countryside voters and businesses were not farmers. "Farming accounts for only 4% of the rural economy and 7% of rural jobs are farming related. About 85% of rural businesses are not related to farming or forestry. And while 12 million people of voting age live in rural areas of the United Kingdom, there are only about 100,000 farmers. For rural businesses outside farming, key issues include connectivity, since rural broadband and mobile phone access lags far behind that available in urban areas, and planning regulations, as many businesses chafe against some planning rules. The CLA, the Country Land and Business Association, has also said that a lack of affordable rural housing is stifling growth. Both Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak have promised to retain or tighten planning laws. Rishi Sunak promised no building on green belt land, and Liz Truss vowed to drop house building targets. Each would restrict the building of solar farms and onshore wind farms. Mark Tufnell is also concerned that the new Tory leader could bow to pressure from some on the right wing of the party and dismantle reforms to farm support payments, which are being gradually introduced. Unlike the European Union system of payment for the amount of land farmed under environmental land management contracts or ELMs, farmers will be paid public money for providing public goods. In return for the subsidies, they will be asked to nurture soils, plant trees, improve water management, protect wildlife, and take other measures that help to clean the air and clean water and safeguard nature. The National Farmers Union, the NFU, has spoken out against the reforms, arguing that at a time of rising food prices, the focus should switch to supporting farmers to grow more food. Mark Tufnell, whose 28,000 members own about half the land in England and Wales, urged Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss to stay with existing policy and give farmers stability. We'll be right back. Mark Tufnell, who owns and manages a mostly arable farm in the Cotswolds and is a Conservative Party member, said, "It's a false argument that you need to stop ELMs or environmental land management contracts to grow more food. You can do both. Without clean air and water and nurtured soils, you can't produce food anyway. And if you're taking money from the public purse, you should show a benefit to the public." Mark Tufnell said, "ELMs, or environmental land management contracts, are world-beating. They're very forward-thinking. They're the way the rest of the world will go eventually, but at a slower pace." Tufnell noted both candidates represented rural constituencies, Liz Truss in East Anglia and Rishi Sunak in Yorkshire, but he said their policy ideas had focused on towns and cities. He said, "The main focus still remains on the metropolitan and urban areas. There is a lack of focus on the countryside." Mark Tufnell said even the drought, which has scorched pastures and left crops dying in the fields to the despair of farmers across the Midlands and south and east of England in particular, had failed to elicit much response. He added, "I'm not sure how much notice either of them has taken of the drought. They have just been running round the country." Mark Tufnell called for the winner of the leadership election to install a proper rural champion at No. 10 Downing Street, who would advocate for policies reflecting the needs of rural Britain. The CLA, the Country Land and Business Association, has estimated that investing in the countryside to bring the key infrastructure in rural areas, such as housing, transport, communications and technology, into line with that in towns and cities, would improve the UK's economic productivity by £43 billion. Mark Tufnell said, "There is a lack of infrastructure that is holding the countryside back. There is enormous potential, but it needs political focus." Members of Britain's Conservative Party had until 5 p.m. on Friday, 9th of September, UK time, to choose their next leader and therefore decide who will succeed the outgoing Boris Johnson as the next Prime Minister. The cost of living crisis, what the government should do about it, and how that should be paid for, has dominated the hustings. Liz Truss launched her campaign with promises of big tax cuts and suggested her government could increase borrowing to pay for them. Her plan to tell people what they want to hear, see this week's ruling out of energy rationing, has left Rishi Sunak with no other choice than to stick to his orthodox stance that the country can't afford tax cuts given the pandemic and the war in Ukraine. Sunak hasn't been able to make his accusations of fantasy economics stick, nor has he benefited from reminding everyone that his rival was a Remainer. Liz Truss has made the Ukraine issue her own, and has also profited from the press narrative that Boris Johnson was shafted by the Westminster elites, for whom, read Sunak.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us listen to a famous saying by the Holy Prophet's fifth infallible successor, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace be upon him, regarding the negative consequences of anger. Never take away or usurp anyone's property.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, community environment. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the community environment in the Islamic lifestyle. What we mean with the community environment is that the community is the part of everyone's life. We generally look at our individual life, but we ignore our social aspect of the life. And we see that there are many things that are happening in the community which must be dealt properly and which must be looked after. But we never pay attention towards that. And in result of that, we see mishappening injustice, we see oppression, we see corruption in the society. And this is all because we never pay attention towards the community environment, to the social environment, to the society in which we are living. And therefore, Islam pays emphasis on this aspect, that we must pay attention to the community in which we are living. As far as we are giving attention, we are attentive to our individual life, we must pay attention towards the society, towards the community, because both of them, our individual life and the community or the society, they both are the part of each other. So therefore, when we want to have a good lifestyle, especially an Islamic lifestyle, it is necessary to look after both aspects, the aspect of my individual life and the aspect of the society in which I'm living or the community in which I am living. Therefore, I need to pay attention towards the community environment in order to have a good community around me. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the community environment in the Islamic lifestyle. We said it is necessary to pay attention towards the community as well as to the individual life. And because we are ignoring our community environment around us, therefore we see corruption, we see injustice, we see oppression in the society. There is a very beautiful hadith, and which has been narrated by the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, and he is trying to explain the life, the community life, and the individual life in this example. He says, imagine a person who is sinful. A sinful person in the community is just like a person who basically board on a boat and they're traveling And when they reach to the middle of the river, if that person, he stands up and he picks up an axe and starts holding the place where he was sitting. And if others who were on the board, if they do not stop him, then obviously the water will sink the whole boat. And even if he answers, like if you want to stop him, even if he says that I'm making a hole in my own seat or the place where I have or I paid rent for it, but still we cannot allow him to do so. Why? Because he is one person, but his action will sink the whole people or the whole community who is on board on that boat. Therefore, it is necessary to stop people in the community from committing sins. And this is our responsibility. Therefore, we must call towards the goodness and stop people from performing evil, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en/call-of-islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Iran is famous for its hand-knotted carpets and ancient art which have been loved for centuries and are never going out of style despite changing taste and increased competition from Asia. Striking geometric shapes that recall 20th century abstract art are what we expect to see in handmade Iranian rugs. But weavers and exporters have been forced to redesign a tradition dating back more than 2,000 years due to numerous problems. Carpet exporter Ahad Azimzadeh says, however, that a revolution is on the way. Iranian rugs are known for dense, curving floral designs in rich colors. They were put on display in a recent exhibition that featured a rug with small squares of hypnotic diagonal blue and white lines and another depicting diamond and other patterns in gold silk. Some countries have overtaken Iran in the global market, but many say modern carpets will never replace the traditional ones which are deep-rooted in Iranian culture. These days, computer technology is impacting every aspect of our life, providing a greater ability to place things, events, and people within context. An Iraqi museum has started using the technology and virtual reality headsets to make exhibits interactive and to bring scenes back to life. Visitors can explore heritage sites destroyed by terrorist groups. Now, using thousands of photographs, a group of local engineers have given a virtual rebirth to five historic sites in Mosul and the broader Nineveh province. That includes a mosque and its leaning minaret. But this museum brings sites back to life for the people who live in Mosul. Although large parts of the old city remain oceans of debris, authorities are trying to restore historic sites, mosques and churches in Mosul. A private museum along the Tigris River, which opened in mid-June, saw more than 4,000 visitors in its first month. The floating cinema of unknown waters is back in the Italian city of Venice, and spectators are getting buoyant to reach the annual Open Sea Film Festival. On board rowing boats, motorboats, gondolas, and whatever capable of floating, spectators sail to the shallows behind the Giudecca Island for this one-of-a-kind cinematic experience. The audience can watch the program from their own boat or a barge with chairs for those without floating transportation. The event consists of a series of screenings, performances and presentations on a floating platform and is held for 12 nights in the Venetian Lagoon.
A new bird species has been discovered on the southernmost islands of the Americas. Biologists are baffled.
Discovering new bird species is very, very difficult and rare because the world has been more focused on observing birds. Therefore, this means the discovery site is unique in the sub-Antarctic zone, on which Chile has important sovereignty. This raises the importance of caring for the environment and unique ecosystems, as these sites will allow us to carry out research on climate change, new species and behaviors.
The tiny bird weighs only 16 grams and has a large beak with black and yellow streaks along its body. Researchers say the animal is a subcategory of a species typically found in the Patagonia forest and inhabits tree trunks. But the newly discovered cousin has surprised scientists as it learned to burrow and live in a harsh tundra climate with bitter temperatures. The Diego Ramirez archipelago, where the bird was found, is an isolated bit of land. It also lacks mammalian predators and woody plants. Biologists and researchers from Chilean universities and various academic centers studied the birds for 6 years before announcing the new species. The next moonshot is finally getting closer. NASA says it's ready to test its next-generation rocket ship on an epic launch set for August the 29th as part of its mission to send people to the moon.
This new deep space exploration system is going to take us back to the moon and to new science discoveries that we can't even imagine yet. NASA is about to make history with this first flight of the Artemis program.
The mega rocket combines the Space Launch System, or SLS, and the Orion crew capsule it will carry to space. The rocket is due to blast off for a test drive from the U.S. base Kennedy Space Center, sending an empty crew capsule around the moon and back to the Earth. The Artemis 1 test flight is planned to take 6 weeks. It's meant to rigorously stress the systems to determine whether the vehicle is ready to safely carry astronauts. The program aims to establish a long-term lunar colony as a stepping stone to the even more ambitious future voyages that will send people to Mars. The SLS represents the biggest new vertical launch system NASA has built since those flown in the 1960s and 70s. In this story, we tell you about what could be the bright side of climate change, and that's the discovery of dinosaur tracks dating back to 113 million years ago. The tracks were found in the U.S. state of Texas, where drought has dried up parts of Paluxy River. Experts say the tracks belong to a two-legged dinosaur with small arms and weighing 7 tons. They say dinosaurs made the prints as they roamed muddy areas over 100 million years ago. The prints were then covered over with sediment due to a flood. And after that, they turned into limestone, protecting the prints. The experts say the tracks have not been seen either before or in decades. age does not matter, it's the heart that counts. A Guatemalan female footballer has proved that there is no point one should worry about the age. 57-year-old Alma Salazar has a passion for soccer and takes care of her team's goalpost. Known as Flying Granny, she launches herself and deflects a ball that's looking for the nets. The passion for the sport was born when she was 19 years old. She started training with a men's team where she often found a place as a goalkeeper. Since then, Alma has played for several professional and amateur football clubs. In her room that overlooks a local stadium, Alma keeps the trophies she has won on a table, most of them as the least defeated goalkeeper. Locals praise her as an unbeatable goalkeeper.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing. An inflatable building that explores how people would potentially live on Mars has been unveiled in the British city of Bristol. It's a two-story structure with an area of 570 square feet, powered by solar panels. It's designed to cope with temperatures as low as minus 63 degrees Celsius. Although the Martian house will be displayed above ground, its lower level will be fully buried to maximize protection against the harsh environment on Mars. Inside, the top floor features a hydroponic living room filled with decorative plants that feed into a circular wastewater system. A team of experts helped develop the design, taking into consideration the complexity of transporting materials to the Red Planet and what is already there.
So in the gold inflatable structure, which you see above you, that's the main living space of the Martian house. It's gold to reflect dangerous solar rays and cosmic radiation, and it's inflatable because it would be filled with a special concrete made of the dust and water that you find on Mars, again to protect you from those dangerous solar and cosmic rays.
The Martian house was envisioned by local artists 7 years ago. The artists also brought together space scientists, architects, engineers, designers, and even school children. The space-age dwelling explores what a house on Mars could be like and is meant for research and experiments about the future. The major objective of the project, however, is to provoke questions about living more sustainably with the resources at hand here on Earth. Japanese plastic food artisans are showcasing their mouth-watering artificial creations at an exhibition in Japan's capital city, Tokyo. From the Leaning Tower of Pizza to fish slicing and cooking, or even the quirky stacked pancakes, you can find almost everything at the exhibit. Other sculptures, including a deep-fried shrimp with full-breaded legs scaling a mountain of shredded cabbage like a tiger. Another creation on display is a Tetris game made of chicken. Plastic food artists get really excited for the exhibition each year as they are given a chance to practice their own spin on creativity, bringing food to life with curious characters.
So normally we have to follow orders from clients. We take their views on board when we're making items. Normally that's our work. But for the competition, you can use your imagination. How it finally ends up is totally up to you. I like that aspect of it.
There are some 60 sculptors on display. Some are silly, but others highlight the artist's skills. The models were made with the same careful detail as the rock-solid noodle soups and crispy-looking plastic snacks on display outside Japanese restaurants. There is a lucrative business for them in Japan.
Forest management plays a key role in mitigating climate change. Like many world countries, China has accelerated environmental and social structural changes in urban spaces to deal with this pertinent issue. The Donggu Forest Park is one such project that has provided city dwellers enough space to breathe. It comes into being from what local people usually called rotten woods. The park on the northern bank of the Xialinge River covers an area of nearly 120 hectares. Nobody would come there before, as the place was full of flies and mosquitoes. But now, with the environment improved and water cleaned in the river, the place has turned into a wonderland, attracting locals and even foreign tourists.
Now the sky is blue, the water clean and the air fresh, with green greeting you wherever you go. The elderly play Tai Chi or do bodybuilding exercises here. Young people play football, basketball and table tennis.
Over the past 20 years, a large number of cities in China have undergone a brief but rapid urban expansion. Most of these cities are now facing social problems such as an aging population and a high prevalence of chronic diseases. A comprehensive environmental improvement program in the area was initiated in 2014 in order to create space for those who want to take a break from their everyday works.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In itemizing the contents of boxes seized materials from Trump's Mar-a-Lago home, a detailed inventory of items put together by the U.S. Justice Department showed the FBI retrieved 71 empty folders from Trump's office and 19 empty folders from a storage room when agents executed a search warrant at Mar-a-Lago recently. We now present you an article written by Hugo Lowell. The piece is titled FBI Materials Seized from Trump's Mar-a-Lago Home Included 90 Empty Folders. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Please stay with us for more of Hugo Lowell's article. According to a detailed inventory of items made public on Friday, 2nd of September, Among the items the FBI retrieved from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort recently were 90 empty folders marked classified or for return to the White House staff secretary or a military aide. The inventory, unsealed by a federal judge overseeing the former president's request to get a so-called special master to determine what materials the Justice Department can use in its investigation, provided the fullest picture to date of what Donald Trump had retained. In itemizing the contents of boxes of seized materials, the inventory put together by the Justice Department showed the FBI retrieved 71 empty folders from Trump's office and 19 empty folders from a storage room when agents executed a search warrant at Mar-a-Lago recently. According to the inventory, the empty folders carried one of two designations. Some files had classified banners, while other files were labeled Return to Staff Secretary, Military Aid. Appearing to indicate that highly sensitive documents were not returned as designated. The startling discovery immediately raised for the first time the prospect that some of US government's most closely guarded secrets could remain unaccounted for, even after the FBI went through Mar-a-Lago and retrieved vast amounts of materials from the property. Still, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence is conducting a risk assessment, not a damage assessment, of Trump's unauthorized retention of classified documents, signaling that, at least for now, it believes the material has not otherwise been compromised. The inventory showed U.S. federal agents also seized thousands of government documents, some with classification markings ranging from confidential to top secret, and others that appeared to be presidential records, as well as hundreds of newspaper and magazine clippings from 2008 through to 2020, gifts and clothes. In a status report from its case team conducting the criminal investigation into the Mar-a-Lago documents that accompanied the inventory, the Justice Department said that although it had completed an initial review of the materials, its full review process was ongoing. The statement from the Justice Department read, "The seized materials will continue to be used to further the government's investigation, and the investigative team will continue to use and evaluate the seized materials as it takes further investigative steps, such as through additional witness interviews and grand jury practices." The Justice Department added in the status report that it intended to use all evidence about the documents, including their nature and their location, to inform the criminal investigation examining potential obstruction of justice and potential violations of the Espionage Act. Donald Trump remained quiet about the release of the inventory on Friday, 2nd of September, though a spokesman said it showed the FBI had overreached. The new detailed inventory list only further proves that this unprecedented and unnecessary raid of President Trump's home was a smash and grab. The detailed list of 33 boxes seized from Mar-a-Lago, which followed the release of the initial property receipt filled out by the FBI at the time of the search, additionally provided more information about how sensitive documents were commingled with more general items Donald Trump potentially kept as souvenirs. For example, item number 26.